بسم الله الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله وصحبه ومن والاه. أما بعد, to proceed, I apologize, it will not be about the Prophet's lofty ambitions today. We have another topic to address. Sometimes we will have to interrupt the series because sometimes there are news that are worth noting. And this particular piece of news is may be a little bit surprising. Why is it worthwhile? But it's within a certain continuum, this news would be significant enough to be noted. Certainly, if you were following the news recently, you must have heard about Arnold Schwarzenegger's scandal with former housekeeper. And you know, in a religious lecture, why do you need to be addressing an issue of that nature? Because it's relevant as a phenomenon, not as a personal deviation. Because as a personal deviation, all human beings are subject to error. All human beings are subject to sin. One of the companions of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, which is marriage, did commit fornication, and he came and admitted and confessed and asked for purification. So human beings are subject to error and sin. That's not only the Muslims are subject to errors and sin, just like the non-Muslims, but even the highest amongst them, the companions, some of them fell into this evil doing. Because certainly of the gravity or enormity of the temptation and so on and so forth. But if you look at it not as an individual incident, but rather as part of a continuum and a trend or a phenomenon, if you look at the recent years and how many scandals have been coming up to the surface, you know, and that's not regular people. That's not ordinary folks, because with regard to the ordinary folks, we all know that the rates of infidelity are extremely high. Different statistics put them at different levels, different numbers. It doesn't really matter whether it's 50%, 70%, a little bit less, a little bit more. It doesn't matter. But even if it was 30%, that is extremely high. That is not, you know, individuals falling into error. That is a phenomenon. That is a trend. That is a communal problem, societal catastrophe that should alert people to some problem, some big problem with the culture, with its traditions, with religion, with just lifestyle, the way of life. So if now not only the public or the masses, but also the elites in the society. So this is the governor, or former governor of California. Prior to this was the governor of North Carolina. Prior to this was the governor of was it South Carolina or North Carolina? Yes, yeah. North Carolina. Prior to this, yeah. And then New Jersey and you know, the Idaho. Yeah, but the idea here is it is really, really phenomenal to the point where when they were grilling Clinton for, you know, his own fallout, Republicans were using those left and right, and then it was shortly thereafter that Newt Gingrich got in trouble himself, and he was the Speaker of the House, the Republican Speaker of the House, so it was like, you know, even. Because really the Speaker of the House would be number second after the President. So this is a Democratic President, Republican Speaker of the House. It does not mean that it doesn't mean that there are no decent people. There are certainly decent people out there. But it just means that the amount of corruption is really not a matter of exception or not a matter of rarity. It's actually a phenomenon that should alert the people to study what is happening. Okay, if you go a little bit backwards, then you get out of those scandals. Keep in mind that this, you know, when we talk about, let's talk about just polygamy for a second. Certainly the sisters start to get anxious when you talk about polygamy. But if you talk about polygamy for a second, now, how many of those scandals do you need to understand why this was legislated? How much suffering? This child who was born out of the wedlock, who was living under the same roof with his four siblings, yet he was the son of the housekeeper, whereas he is their sibling. Or the multitudes of children who do not know who their father is, who are not told, or who are not sure, this or that. All of this would have been solved by legislating polygamy. And now this is not, again, you know, forcing Sharia on America, but this is to say that the system in Islam is superior. You know, they advise people to comply with the laws so that they avoid trouble to themselves and to their communities, but we still have to acknowledge the superiority, supremacy of the system in Islam, that all, you know, justifications for polygamy aside, if there is nothing, you know, if she is not sick, if she is not sterile or infertile, if, you know, if there is just basically nothing, if we don't have surplus of females, if we don't have widows and divorcees and so on, if there is nothing, but there is this increased virility that some men have that would not be satisfied with one spouse, and that is throughout the history, would it be more honorable for the women, for the womankind, would it be more honorable to be a co-wife or to be mistresses? Would it be more honorable for the child to be, you know, another sibling, or to be, to be either hidden or to be unacknowledged by the father, or to not know his father, and so on and so forth? So that, if that is the only justification, that would have been a sufficient justification. So if you go backward a little bit, the financial crisis, what we're just looking at, you know, why can't they see it? You know, okay, if you look at the financial crisis, you know, it's not only what they can't they see, it's why are they so critical of this area when they have all of those troubles. You go back to the financial crisis, and each and everything they did wrong was forbidden in Islam. So this was the antidote, the system is the antidote of the Islamic, or Islam is the antidote of the system, the cure of the system. So if you talk about usury, forbidden. If you talk about sales of debt, forbidden. If you talk about excessive risk taking, which is a lot of forbidden, and that is basically what brought all of the market, you know, not just this market, but all of the markets down. Usury that will make the bank irresponsible, lend, they wanted to lend more, because the more you lend, the more you make profit, and then you make a bubble, but you don't care because you have your mortgage, your mortgages insured. And that's excessive risk taking, which is gone. And then you take that mortgage and you set it to a different bank somewhere else across the ocean. And that is sales of debts, which is forbidden. So you're not paying attention to the possibility that not only a few people may default, a lot of people may default. And if a lot of people defaulted, the insurance companies will not be able to pay the banks, and the insurance companies that were not able to pay the banks, then you got the banks down, you got the insurance companies down, and then when you got some banks down because of the sales of debt or sales of mortgages, you got a lot of banks down, so you got the whole system down. Now, even if you recoup from this, the social price, the families that were broken down, the children that were out in the street, people who committed suicide, who have roles in, you know, their families. They may have been mothers, they may have been fathers, etc. That social price, you know, capitalism does not really account for it. Even though Adam Smith was a little bit more humane than this, from the Wealth of Nations, But in, finally, the final product does not really account for this. When the stock market rebounds, everybody will be happy as if nothing happened, as if, you know, hundreds of thousands of families did not lose their homes, you know, and so much social disruption did not take place. Anyway. So you look at this, and then you look at admission after admission, confession after confession, attestation after attestation, that the Islamic system could be a great alternative, could be a good alternative, from, you know, editors of financial newspapers, the economist, the French Economist, Financial Times, Sydney Aaron Tribune, etc. So why isn't anyone paying attention to this? If you go backward a little bit at the issue of Hawaiian in the early 1930s in this country, there was an attempt to ban Hawaiian and to forbid or prohibit, it's the period of the prohibition, to prohibit the manufacturing of Hawaiian and sales of Hawaiian and so on. But it failed. That attempt utterly failed. But if you look at how Islam was able to enforce this on, you know, hundreds of millions of people throughout 1,400 years, more than 1,400 years, it is remarkable. And people should also ask themselves, why was wine not really clearly forbidden in my book, when it leads to this much evil, when it is behind all of those, you know, high road the highway fatalities, when it was behind all of those homicides, when it was behind all of those suicides, when it's behind all of this depression, when it's behind all of the sickness and liver cirrhosis and so on and so forth. Why was it not forbidden if it is this evil? Shouldn't God, the all-merciful, all-knowing, the all-wise, all-seer, caution us about the evils of this substance? And then if you go back a little bit, not necessarily back, but you move out to a different topic, the issue of pork, for instance, it is, even priests now, as may have shown you, or you may have come across this video, that recognize the great, health harms of eating pork. It is just not the right animal to eat. It will pass on all of the toxins, all of the poisons to you, very sincerely, without, shortchanging you of any poisons, of any toxins, of any harmful biological or chemical substances. And besides the fact that you don't see them use lard anymore. A few decades ago, lard was widely used. Up until now, in Mexico, still to some extent used, and some places it's used. But up here, it was used widely. And they quit using it because it's not good for you. It's not because, Sharia was enforced on the people, but it is just not good for you to have it in candy or anything. And if you go away from all of this into a completely different area, which is the area of belief or creed, if you look at the concept of the Trinity itself and the concept of Jesus, peace be upon him, being Son of God, and the revised, standardized version of 1952 taken out, that part in 1971, taken out that statement about, for God so loved the world that he sacrificed his only son. That only was taken out because it was not found in the most ancient manuscripts, because there are different, eras of manuscripts. So the most ancient manuscripts, Codex Alexandrinus and Britannicus and another one. These manuscripts did not have the word only in them. So it was taken out of the revised standardized version. So if you look at it, that's the holy book. It's still work in progress. The holy book, after 2,000 years, is still work in progress. So some things are being taken out, some things are being left. What is this? And why isn't this alerting someone to say, why did God not alert anyone to this mistake? It's a humongous mistake. Because in terms of the children of God, there are tons of them in the Bible. So he's the Father, and everybody is the children. Jesus, peace be upon him, and he was surrounded in the temple. He said to them, "You are all the children of God." So what made him different and special is that very word, the only, his only son. Otherwise, if it is just his son, he has a lot of sons. it turns out that after this is taken out, the only sons of God in the Bible would be David and the king, Melchizedek. So these are the two only sons of God in the Bible now, not Jesus, peace be upon him. So, why, after all of this, why do you think Christians are not really looking into, you know, there are Christians who look into Islam seriously and convert Islam, but why do you think Christians, more and more Christians, larger number of Christians, are not looking into Islam seriously and converting? Why? Yeah, that is one reason. So, temptations of this life, so it is basically heedlessness, recklessness, indifference to the whole concept of religion, the concept of the hereafter, the concept of God. In fact, Nietzsche, which was a German philosopher, you know, he had a book about the death of God. You know, one of I think in later in his career, before the end of his career. Okay. So, okay, heedlessness. What else? Yeah, in fact, the Sophists, the pre-Socrates philosophers, or not really philosophers, they used to be called Sophists. And one of the Sophists said that, like a real evil man, figured out that secular law is not sufficient to prevent people from evil doing in secret. So, that real evil person invented the idea of religion so that he cannot even do wrong in secret. So, some people have that concept. So, it is basically intellectual misstep or intellectual misguidance. But they would not, you know, after they just make this, you know, conclusion, they would not go back and ask themselves, but who brought us here? You know, that is a question that is quite valid. Who brought us here? And if we are purposeful creations, what purpose do we have in our creation? We're purposeful. So the one who made us must be purposeful as well. Because it's impossible that he would get something that he lacks. So if we're purposeful, then he must be purposeful. Wise, wise, prudent, prudent. Like much more, much more, and much more. So he can dodge that question, basically. Just comfort themselves with that earlier conclusion that someone invented the idea of religion. Okay, so it's intellectual misguidance. What else? Yeah. Okay, so Islam is completely foreign to them, so it is basically stranger anxiety type feeling. Okay. And then they would feel that Judaism is a bit closer, or, you know, significantly closer to God. The problem is, in Judaism, you're not invited. So, it is it is a tribal affiliation. And even if he converts to Judaism according to the Orthodox Jews, the people really know what they're doing. You know, because there are modernists in every religion who are just trying to, you know, basically reformulate the religion, remake the religion. But the Orthodox and Judaism, they wouldn't accept the converts as true Jews. So it is a religion that doesn't really invite you to it. So I don't think this is quite worth looking into. If you're not invited, how could you really be that interested in a religion that excludes you, does not acknowledge you? Okay. What else? Mm-hmm. Western media is prejudiced against this time. Okay, good. Then we got to this point. The idea here is, when it comes to Islam, when it comes to their perception of Islam, we have three steps. First, because if we want to analyze it this way so that we can identify where the trouble is coming from so that we can attempt to solve it, because are we interested in them becoming Muslims? Most certainly, you know, the conversion of one individual, one human being, is greater than the whole world, than what it possesses, what's it. So yes, certainly we are keen, we're interested, and therefore we have to analyze it. We have to break it down into phases. One of the phases is misinformation. Misinformation. One is misunderstanding. And one, or misunderstanding or misinterpretation. And one is our fault. Our own fault. We should not always clear yourself of all wrongdoing, because we know that we're not clear of wrongdoing. So these are the three reasons behind. We talked about, you know, a lot of other things. We talked about heedlessness. We talked about intellectual misguidance. We talked about other things that may have kept them away from religion in general. But with regard to Islam, in particular, then these are the three phases: misinformation, misinterpretation, and the part of it is that is our fault. Okay, give me some examples of misinformation. Muslims always kill people. Yeah. Okay.
What she had, the translation of the Holy War and the 72 version of the Quran, and there is nothing in the 72 version of the Quran.
Okay, so misinformation. There are clear examples that you may have used, because this example is somewhat confounded with current circumstances. But a clear example, you know, because misinformation is not only, we're talking about old people, we're not talking about educated people versus uneducated people, we're just talking about old people. Part of the misinformation is that we worship the Prophet. In fact, I got this question from Islam Online. about you're called Mohammedan, so you worship a man, and it sounds almost surreal, because you know, for a Christian to say, you know, you're called Mohammedan, so you worship a man, is a little bit ironic. First of all, we're not called Mohammedans. You called us Mohammedans. We have always called ourselves Muslims. So you called us Mohammedans because you're called Christians. So you figured, since, you know, you're called Christians after the Christ, you should be called Mohammedans after Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. But we're not. We're not Mohammedans. We're Muslims. So that is misinformation here. The other idea about Allah being the moon god, and certainly, you know, this some of the misinformation can be dispelled readily by a simple verse in the Quran, like وَمَا مُحَمَّدٌ إِلَّا رَسُولٌ قَدْ خَلَتْ مِنْ قَبْلِهِ الرُّسُلُ فَإِنْ مَاتَ أَوْ قُتِلَ انقَلَبْتُمْ عَلَىٰ أَعْقَابِكُمْ. And Muhammad was not but a messenger before which many messengers have come. So he would then return back into this belief if he was killed or if he dies. Okay. And the other idea of Allah being the moon god, that is also quite a popular idea. Where did this come from? It came from medieval fantasies about Islam and Muslims, where they used to call Muslims Saracens. And they said that Allah is the moon god because we actually fast when we see the moon, and you know, our months follow the lunar cycle. So anyway, how do you dispel this? How do you counter this? لا تسجدوا للشمس ولا للقمر واسجدوا لله الذي خلقهن. Do not prostrate before the sun or the moon, and prostrate before Allah who created them both. So that is also very easy to counter from the Quran. So these are just some examples of misinformation. Misinterpretation. What about misinterpretation? Misunderstanding. Part of the misunderstanding or the misinterpretation, which is not, you know, straightforward misinformation, is the assumption they have that, you know, that Islam and the Islamists, the fear from, part of the fear from Islamists is that they think that Islam or the Islamists are the sort of extra strength version of the current Muslims, of the current Muslim society, and Islamist society, a society that would follow the Islamist rules, would be an extra strength version. So in other words, it will be more of the same. More of the same. So if they look at the current realities of Muslims, they are rather depressing, right? Muslim countries, with the exception of some that are trying to sort of disengage from the third world, such as Malaysia and Turkey and so on, the very vast majority of Muslim countries are deeply engaged or deeply into you know, the third world category, or at the bottom of the ranking. So then in this case, we need to be clear about the reality of Muslims and how it is completely divorced from true Islam, and that Muslims are not a lighter version of Islam. being of actually thinking in certain, and certainly Muslims are still Muslims, but they have taken in certain regards, in certain matters, a completely different course. It is not like, you know, a lighter version. They have taken an opposite course from Islam. So if Islam says right, they went left. If Islam says north, they went south. Completely different course, which resulted in their backwardness. So their backwardness is not a consequence of their Islam. It is rather a consequence of their departure from their religion. So this is a matter of misinterpretation. Sometimes we contribute to the misinterpretation. And give me examples where we could contribute to the misinterpretation. Part of it could be misinformation, part of it could be misinterpretation, part of it could be our fault. So no miss on their part, it's miss on our part. It's misconduct on our part. So, give me examples. Yeah. Give me examples on where for women, an example on misinformation, misinterpretation, and or misunderstanding on their part and misconduct on our part. Misinformation. But how could this be misinformation? Because your testimony is half the man's testimony. That is, yes. And this is not because of deficiency in her, but rather because of the nature of the testimony. It is the testimony regarding matters in which women throughout the history up until now, they don't have that much expertise in. But her testimony in childbirth is double the man's testimony. So he can have one woman as a witness on childbirth. He need two men to be witnesses to establish maternity. Mm-hmm. You need two male witnesses to establish maternity, to be witnesses on childbirth, child delivery, that this little baby was born to this woman. To establish that, you need two males, but you need one female. So her testimony here is double the males. But in finance and transactions, her testimony is one half, because yes, and up until now. And then certainly, So, this is not, okay. Like, misinformation, you can take simply the example of, they used to bar women from, in Afghanistan, during the Taliban time, they used to bar women from schools because women cannot go to schools. I've given this example that's still haunting me on the websites. There's someone who attended it, where he went thereafter. He still says that I have been praising Taliban or stuff like that. But, so what? Anyway. So when those rumors, that they tried to circulate that girls are actually prevented from going to school, were not really true. It was a matter of rationing. because there were, I think, 7% of girls went to school, 17% of boys went to schools at that time. Even if you did have certain practices that are a little bit too strict, but this piece was misinformation because they were not, they actually received a delegation from the United Nations and they told them, please build us schools and we will send the girls to them. Come and build them and we will send the girls to them. But until you do, yes, we will favor the boys. Because after all, the market, you know, the ones who really need to fill all the positions, the various positions on the market, as plumbers and this and that, and they will be most likely the boys. So if we will have to raise them, yes, we will favor the boys, but if we do have resources, we will certainly let the girls go to school to come and build them, and we will send them. Anyway, so this is misinformation. We talked about misinformation and how the moon god, and not moon god, and Muhammad is, but misinformation regarding women in particular. There's so much that they don't know about women in Islam. They don't know that, you know, they did not have divorce, which meant torture for the woman who is, locked into a failed relationship, a failed marital relationship. We don't only have divorce, but we have quota, which is divorce instigated by the woman. And the idea of inheritance being half, that's actually, Sheikh Muhammad al-Sirada went as far as saying that it's favoring women over men, because she takes the half and she's not responsible for anyone. She keeps it, she invests it, and she's not asked to spend of it on anyone. He takes, you know, twice as much, but he's asked to spend of it on his wife, and guess what? On his sister, if she does not have the means, and his father passed away. Anyway, misinformation. Misinterpretation regarding to women's issues, or misunderstanding with regard to women's issues. The beating, when they think that the beating is you really, you know, give her a bloody nose and break her ribs, and all of this is forbidden, strictly forbidden. The beating is almost symbolic. It indicates that we have got into the verse of dissolution of the family, breakdown of the family. And if you are on a slippery, if you're going down a slippery slope that is twisted, and you're about to fall off the cliff, and the passenger next to you in the car will probably not tell you, Ibrahim, you're about to fall off the cliff. He may actually give you an elbow or slap you on the face or do something that is rather radical to awake you and to alert you that you're about to fall off the cliff or about to all die. So that is what this is like. So that is, that's misunderstanding. Misunderstanding also is, you know, misunderstanding of polygamy. They misunderstand how this whole thing functions. Okay, so where did we contribute here? Where is our misconduct been responsible for their sort of outlook on women in Islam, or misconduct. Domestic violence, yes, yes. But domestic violence amongst Muslims, the idea here is anecdotes are worthless. Islam teaches us that, by the way. In Islam, what are anecdotes called? In fiqh, they're called waqa'a ayan. They're worthless. Anecdotes are worthless. So you can't generalize, you cannot extrapolate from anecdotes. Do you have statistics to show that domestic violence is higher amongst Muslim families within the same environment? Because you have to stabilize all of the confounding factors. Otherwise, you'll have a skewed specimen. You live in the same environment, same circumstances, same socioeconomic, whatever, same size of the family, same neighborhood, same, and then the rates of domestic violence are higher amongst Muslim families within the same, all of the above, then I would listen to you. But to bring me some news about some Muslim who beat his wife or who did something, well, you know, the ERs are full every day after midnight of women who got beaten by their boyfriends or spouses or this or that. So anyway, now that is, but if you take a society like Egypt, for instance, and I'm Egyptian, so I can do as much as I want, or say as much as I want. If you take a society like Egypt, for instance, sexual harassment on the streets is rather a disturbing phenomenon. And there were BBC reports about this, and so it is not sexual harassment, you know, like full-blown sexual harassment, but it is passing marks and, you know, looking up and down and just making women feel comfortable in the street. Has been traditionally one of our failures, our cultural failures. That is traditionally, since when? I think since the 70s. It didn't used to be like this before, but I think that it's multifactorial, for sure. There's a lot of single young males who are incapable of marriage, and so there are multiple factors, but still, for a Muslim society, that is a misconduct. That is a failure on our part. So if they come and see this, and you should not really blame them to think bad of you, should you? You start to be ridiculous. Because, yes, that's a misconduct. Say to the misconduct, a misconduct. In fact, more than 10 verses in the Quran have been revealed to support the argument of a Jew against the Muslim. And, you know, and to tell the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam to not be a lawyer or act an attorney on behalf of the treacherous traitors. And do not be a speaker on behalf of the traitors. So you've got to say, yes, this is a failure, and then it's our misconduct, we need to fix it. Where else have we failed? Partly, to a great extent, we have failed in being able to realize righteous governance in our countries. If you will have to also find some excuse for them. it is not a complete excuse, like it does not justify for them not to thirst for the truth, because even amongst their correlationists, some people who wanted to find the truth were able to find it, who wanted to convert to Islam were able to convert to Islam, who kept away all of the distractions, all of the confounding factors, and they truly searched for the truth about their religion, they were able to discover the beauty of their religion itself. So this is not an excuse, like a complete excuse. But to a certain extent, it is failure on our part that makes them less interested. That makes them less interested. Because certainly your misconduct as a Muslim will be a repellent, will repel people away. So our failure in realizing righteous governance, and that is not recently, by the way. We have been in this dilemma for hundreds of years across the Muslim countries. And we have to be honest with ourselves. It makes it quite hard for someone who lives in a country where he feels a certain degree of freedom, a certain degree of equality, a certain degree of respect for human dignity, to know about all the things that happen in our countries, the tyrannical regimes, despotism, torture, and so on and so forth, and think really positively of us as a nation, because you're not going to be able to tell them that those regimes have been imposed by the West, because ultimately, a willful nation should be able to choose its destiny, and nations can do that. So if we don't, it is misconduct on our behalf. This misconduct on our behalf has been, and this is the one time where it is not simply a misconduct from the public, from the masses, from the ignorant people in the streets, like this harassment business. Also, in their media reports, sexual harassment, people think that, you know, big things are happening in the streets, which is also a little sensational, but the sexual harassment is mostly verbal. Anyway, but this is an issue where Islam itself, or the Muslim scholars, never contributed any part to it. Islam itself never contributes to any misunderstanding. But Muslim scholars, or some Muslim scholars, may contribute to some degree of misunderstanding. And in fact, we have been, we were able to produce all of those tyrannical regimes because of some degree of misunderstanding of the concept of obedience to the ruler, or the concept of allegiance to the regime and to the ruler. It has been over-stressed and emphasized that it resulted in, and we have to be honest, you know, the Crusaders did not have the right to do all of what they did. And the Crusaders knew that church of nativity has been reconstructed, but what incited their feelings in the first place was that Egyptian sultan, al-Hakim bi Amr Allah, who used to be called Araos or Karakos in Egypt, was quite a lunatic, and he destroyed the church. It's the Church of the Holy Sepulchre that he destroyed. So that is what triggered their anger. Now, certainly when they proceeded to invade the Muslim East, they had already known that the church was rebuilt, that the Muslims rebuilt it. They had already known that this ruler was a lunatic. They had already known that this ruler burnt his own capital, Cairo, itself. He burnt Cairo down and ran away. And some people think that he is the reincarnation of God, or Druze, the considering holy in Lebanon. Anyway, so we allow the person like this to rule us. And he did cause us trouble, even though they knew that it is not the Muslim people. They knew that the Muslims have actually protected those churches for hundreds of years. They've known that the Muslims have suffered from this ruler just as much as anyone else, if not more. But again, isn't it our fault that we have allowed ourselves to be ruled by a lunatic? Don't we still do this? Don't we still have, like, utterly crazy rulers who should actually be admitted to, like, psychiatric units? They're, like, sick, you know. They need to be treated. And to some extent, some of the Muslim scholars did contribute to this tragic development. Because Islam has never asked of us or accepted of us this degree of subservience to the rulers. In fact, Abu Bakr, when he first took the oath, or not took the oath, in his inaugural speech, he said, "In ahsantu fa'ayinuni wa in asa'tu fa'qawimuni. Ya ayyuhan nasu inni qad wallitu alaykum wa lastu bi khayrikum. In ahsantu fa'ayinuni wa in asa'tu fa'qawimuni. Oh, you people, I have been made an authority over you, and I'm not the best amongst you. If I do well, help me out. And if I do otherwise, correct me. And if I do otherwise, correct me." Al-Husayn did go out in arms to correct the deviation that he witnessed. Zubayr and Talha went out in arms to correct the deviation that they witnessed. Abdullah ibn Zubayr went out in arms to correct the deviation he witnessed. Ibn al-Ashraf went out in arms to correct the deviation that he witnessed. Muhammad Sahib al-Nafs al-Zakiyya, that was, you know, the great-grandson of al-Hasan, went out in arms to correct the deviation. He was supported by Abu Hanifa and Malik, both of them. His sibling, his brother Ibrahim, went out in arms to correct the deviation that he witnessed. So our righteous predecessors have not shown that degree of subservience to wicked rulers. Because to show that degree of subservience to wicked rulers will eventually result in all of those disasters. Now we said that people thereafter reach the consensus that you do not go out against the ruler until they commit major disbelief. That has to be understood in the right context. It is a matter that is based on maslaha. It's a consensus that is based on maslaha, because first of all, as we said before, a consensus after the Sahaba is very hard to come by. A consensus after the Sahaba that goes against an opinion of multitudes of Sahabas is extremely hard to come by. This is a consensus that is based on benefit and harm, the balance of benefit and harm, not a consensus that is based on the issue itself. However, this consensus in and of itself has been countered by several that are to the opposite. Ibn Athiyyah al-Andalusi reported the consensus that if he abandoned Surah, he should be rebelled against. Al-Qurtubi, Sahib al-Mufhim, the author of al-Mufhim, who is actually the Sheikh of al-Qurtubi, the commentator, has reported a consensus that if he allowed the sales of wine and corruption and so on and so forth, that he should be rebelled against. So this consensus has been countered by other reports of consensus as well. Now, we're not talking now about the moderate position, because that will take a very long time to talk about the moderate position regarding this issue. But we're talking about our contribution to the misunderstanding. We're not always clear of wrongdoing. It is not always that they can't see. Sometimes they can't see. Sometimes they see with dark glasses. Sometimes they can see, and we are wrong. So at least the part that we can readily and rapidly fix so that we're not deterring people from the religion of Allah is the part, that third one, our misconduct. And then we can move on to fix misinformation because it's easier to fix misinformation. You know, you worship the moon god. No, you know, our Quran says, do not worship the sun or the moon and worship the one who created them both. You're Muhammadans, you worship Muhammad. No, our Quran says, Muhammad is none but the messenger before which many messengers have come. And misinformation is easier. It's easier to fix. And then the toughest would be their misunderstanding, misinterpretation. It is their, you know, and this will take a lot more effort. But there is misconduct on our part we can fix quickly. There is misinformation, that is the second easiest. And then there is this misinterpretation, which will take a coherent message from us to explain our religion. In light of what we said today about Schwarzenegger's scandal that came, you know, as part of the continuum of such scandals, the financial crisis, the issue of wine, the issue of pork, the issue of the deletions and additions in the Bible, I think that we have done so much wrong that distorted the image of Islam. We have not given like the Sahaba, they give the ideal of Islam in reality. We have not actually manifested the Islamic ideals in reality for anyone to see it. Where can they see it? You see, that Persian ambassador, the Persian king who came in front of Umar radiallahu anhu, sitting, laying down in the shade of the tree, he was able to grasp, to behold the idea operating in the reality of Muslims. Now, where do you send people to see the Islamic ideals operative in the reality? Nowhere. So that's the message for today. There is work that we need to do ourselves.